Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. In the mid-90s, there was a small story in the Miami Herald about a man who was being tried for poaching orchids in the Everglades. That story inspired author Susan Orlean to write a piece in The New Yorker, and it inspired her later to write a book called The Orchid Thief. And that book eventually turned into the Oscar-winning film adaptation starring Nicolas Cage and Meryl Streep. Now, The Orchid Thief is the Sundial Book Club title for January. We spoke with Susan recently and started by asking her to take us back to the day when she saw that original Miami Herald article.
I remember it vividly. I was flying back through Miami. I began just looking to see if there was anything to read in the seat pocket. As it turned out, someone had left a copy of the Miami Herald. My eye fell immediately on a headline that said something to the effect of a local nurseryman arrested with rare orchids. And I thought, oh, that sounds like an interesting story. I started reading it, and it was really a baffling little news story about the arrest of John LaRoche. And none of it made sense to me. I couldn't understand why someone would be arrested for having orchids. That, I think, was my first question. And my second question is, why would someone steal orchids? I mean, orchids are pretty easy to get. And I couldn't imagine why you would steal orchids rather than just going to Home Depot and buying them.
When did it become a book, or when did you decide there's more here?
As I was working on the story, I was constantly aware of how many more directions the story seemed to point to. Even though New Yorker stories are quite substantial and pretty long for a magazine story, I just felt like there was so much more to say. As I came to the end of writing the New Yorker piece, I called my agent and I said, I know this sounds crazy, but I want to do a book about this. I knew that my publisher would be a little puzzled. If, you know, it's not that easy to come in and say, I want to do a book about a toothless guy who's poaching orchids in South Florida. It doesn't instantly grab you as a great story. But I was really passionate about it, and I felt certain that there was a great book in the story.
You have a beautiful way of describing orchids and people, and I wanted you to tell me, elaborate a little bit more about that first day you met John LaRoche.
I was very struck by him. He makes a real impression. And I knew almost from the very beginning that I was going to start the story by describing him. Among other things, he had come to court wearing a sort of dirty t-shirt and jeans, and yet stood up in court and announced that he was the smartest person essentially in the world. So I thought this guy has a kind of arrogance and ego that's just fascinating. And he cuts a interesting figure. I mean, he's very tall and very skinny. He had all of his front teeth knocked out in a car accident, and he hadn't bothered to replace them, which to me was also very telling. I mean, he's just a person who marches to his own drummer. And something that might make other people feel self-conscious, like not having front teeth, it just didn't faze him. Nothing seemed to kind of get in his way of being who he was. It occurred to me that I really wanted to describe the impact that it had on me seeing him for the first time.
So, Susan, this is a great scene in the book where you and John are going to basically an orchid show, right, in Fort Lauderdale, and you're about to buy tickets, or he thinks you've got a pass to get in for free, right?
Right. I think he just assumed that as a journalist, I should be able to get a hold of these tickets for us. So I'll begin sort of in the middle of that scene. The tickets were $6. LaRoche looked at me. "Can't you get these for free?" he asked. "Free? How would I get them for free?" I said. LaRoche frowned and then stepped in front of me and said to the man at the ticket table, "Hey, how about if you give us two tickets?" The ticket seller chuckled and stuck out his hand, palm up. "It's research," LaRoche insisted. The man's hand didn't move. The door to the auditorium opened and a couple came through, leaving the show. The man was balancing a box full of plants on his hip. As they walked by, he was saying, "I am really not a Cattleya person, Dee Dee." And she was shaking her head and saying, "Well, I am really not a PAF person, Phil." A rush of warm air picked up one of the show programs sitting on the table, and it went fluttering and landed with a sigh on the floor. A fidgety line was forming behind us. I counted out $12 into the ticket man's hand. LaRoche dropped the stubs in the prize drawing box.
Considering the you know, that arrogance, considering his personality, how did he take to you?
This is the great thing about writing about a person who's pretty egocentric. They love attention. And he loved the idea that he was teaching me about orchids. And actually, that was a lot of our relationship. I didn't know anything about orchids. He believed that he knew everything about orchids, and he did know a great deal about them. So our relationship initially had that dynamic, which was I was the naive, fumbling, bumbling New Yorker, and he was the smart expert on Florida, on orchids, and he was willing to teach me. And I think it really appealed to his ego. And also, you know, he really does have this interesting desire to impart his knowledge.
Did you trust him, though, or did you have to go and double check everything he kept telling you?
I was skeptical. I didn't think he was a liar, but I didn't. Some of his stories were so fantastical that I didn't quite believe them. And many of them seemed a little more dramatic than was entirely credible. So I did have to do a lot of double checking. And then some of the stories, I felt like what was interesting was his version of the story, not whether it was true or not true, but that he construed it in such a way that told you a lot about him. Right. He tended to see his life in these very big, dramatic, sweeping narratives. And were the narratives actually true or not? In many instances, it was too hard to actually fact check them because they were personal incidents. But he's a storyteller. He likes crafting these dramas, and I felt like that was essential to the story, was seeing him in that light.
We're talking with author Susan Orlean. Her book, The Orchid Thief, is the Sundial Book Club January title. You can learn more about the book and other choices that we have for our book club on our Facebook page. Just look up Sundial Book Club. The book was eventually made into a movie called Adaptation, starring Nicolas Cage and Meryl Streep. We got some fascinating responses from readers on the Facebook page. And one of them is Craig Pittman. He's an environmental journalist in the west coast of Florida. He wrote a piece after your book came out about some of the concerns that some orchid enthusiasts had with the credibility of your research. But we're in no position to fact check his claims about how many hybrid orchids exist in the Everglades. But I am curious to hear this. You were with a lot of these folks, hardcore, diehard orchid collectors who know this world. How did you deal with any of the criticism that's coming from these folks after your book came out? You know, what were they telling you? You know, because I'd imagine some people were probably willing to jump on you and say, wait a second, what does she know about orchids?
Right. Well, that's always the challenge when you're a journalist. I don't pretend to be an expert on anything I write about. I'm an expert in learning. I'm very good at learning. And I write about things that I don't know anything about. And part of my challenge and my expertise is figuring out how to learn about a new subject and a subculture. I knew, given the kind of clannishness of the orchid world, that there would be people who didn't feel I had any right to write about orchids because I wasn't part of their world, which is, of course, totally absurd. Or they would nitpick over tiny facts that they felt that I got wrong or I didn't represent properly. You know, the for every fact in the book was fact-checked. It doesn't mean there aren't occasionally errors that sneak through, of course, but you've got several layers of fact-checking and copy editing to try to make sure that the facts as they are presented are accurate. Quotes, for instance, if John LaRoche asserts something, that's not a fact that I'm presenting to you what he is asserting, and I want to leave it as it is because it's more about illustrating his sense of himself as opposed to that it is in itself accurate. This is the thing. You don't want a book about an insular world necessarily written by someone who is in that insular world. That's what I bring to it, is the perspective of an outsider who's coming into this world and learning about it and has a certain amount of objectivity to look at it and construct it. And every book I've ever written has introduced me to a new world that I knew nothing about. And I think I've done a pretty good job of making my way in these subcultures and creating books that stand up to scrutiny.
One of the things I loved about the book myself is, again, how you describe some of the places that you got to go to. And of course, you know, where, you know, John found himself getting in trouble and where a lot of people were going to try to find orchids was this little place, this little area of Southwest Florida called the Fakahatchee Strand. And I just wanted to get your first impression when you first arrived there.
I had spent a lot of time in Florida, both just on family vacations, and then I had written a number of stories over the years about Florida. It's a really interesting place, and it seems like there's always a story waiting to be told in South Florida. So I was not a stranger, but what I found so interesting is that in spite of all the time I had spent in Florida, I never even heard of the Fakahatchee. I had never been in that part of Florida. I had no idea that that kind of wilderness existed so near the very, very much domesticated parts of Florida that I was more familiar with. So that was a lot of what fascinated me. I mean, my parents had a condo in West Palm Beach, so I was really just a hop, skip, and a jump away from the Fakahatchee, but I had no idea it existed. Driving from my parents', you know, gated condo community to the Fakahatchee and seeing it for the first time was a bit of a revelation. That feeling of this is what Florida, had it not been settled, might have looked like. It was a real revelation to see what Florida on its own would have looked like. And of course, part of the thing that became so interesting was learning that the Fakahatchee actually wasn't virgin wilderness at all. And it had been planned as a huge subdivision that simply never developed. And then it kind of returned to being wild. So that was even more interesting than being in virgin wilderness. This was reclaimed wilderness. I had never been in a real swamp before. So when I first got to the edge of the Fakahatchee and was told to step in, I was not thrilled. I was really reluctant and thought, I can't believe I'm doing this. I do not want to go in there. And I really, really fought every instinct to keep myself out. You know, I looked at it as just teeming with rattlesnakes and alligators and spiders and God knows what else. And I was really nervous. And it took every ounce of my journalistic fortitude to convince myself to go in. And then as it turned out, I went in several times because I really needed to for the sake of the book. And each time it was challenging, though. I think there is a natural instinct that we humans have, which is to look at a swamp and resist.
That's a good point. I've lived in Florida most of my life and I still feel that way. That's a really good point. I wanted to ask you about the movie adaptation, which was called Adaptation, starring Nicolas Cage and Meryl Streep. Charlie Kaufman, the director, and he's known for taking very creative approaches with his films. The way he approached this, I mean, Nicolas Cage is more or less a representation of Kaufman, and he's struggling with the adaptation of the book in the script. Did you appreciate the layers of complexity of that approach, or did it stray way too much from your story because it was getting all meta?
I love the movie. I think that it gets at the themes of the book in a much deeper way than a straightforward adaptation would have or could have. It really did look at this central theme, which is what is the role that passion plays in our lives and what's the struggle between art and commerce. And really it was, to me, as in many ways, a more faithful adaptation than just a literal adaptation of the book would have been.
You know, one of the other things too, in the book, you hint at wanting to be careful not to fall into the obsession like all the other characters that you introduce us to. But I wonder, after finishing the book, did you understand what that obsession was? Why do they have it?
Absolutely. It is, I think for me, this was a journey into understanding the function that a passion for anything fills in our lives. Orchids happen to be fascinating. I mean, they really are genuinely fascinating. They could provide you with an almost unlimited source of curiosity and learning. And, you know, they're so diverse and strange and marvelous looking. So just as a thing that is interesting, I understood it much more than I did before I began the book. But in addition, I became very aware of the value of feeling passionate about something, about anything. And whether it's orchids or collecting china or raising dogs or whatever it is, or for many people, it's a passion for their family or religion or politics. The function is what really is important, and it's a way of feeling your place in the world and understanding how to navigate the universe. So I absolutely understood it. And I even came to really appreciate how beautiful orchids are, which was something that I didn't expect to have happen.
That was author Susan Orlean. Her book, The Orchid Thief, is the January title for the Sundial Book Club. You can learn more about it on our Facebook page. Just look up Sundial Book Club. Ask to join. It's free. We'd love to have you. We're going to have a panel conversation next week with some of our readers about the book, so message us there if you're interested in joining. Susan's most recent book, The Library Book, is also available in local bookstores. Well, still to come, with tomorrow's historic presidential inauguration, we introduce you to President Obama's inaugural poet, Richard Blanco.